we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
With the Alabama legislature being in full session now and a lot of shenanigans being overtly put on to us by these people that are supposed to be representing us, so unfortunately they have been taken hostage in so many ways by the medical industrial complex. So we will talk about that afterwards, but on a micro level, let's look at a study that just came out of Oxford on ivermectin that shows the corruption that is so replete in the medical industrial complex. Jordan?
So this was a trial that was done by actually the same guy that did the trial on molnupiravir, which is basically fraudulent, in a sense, medicine. And we will talk about why that matters here in a second, because one of the things you'll find out is that he did that trial very differently in terms of inclusion-exclusion criteria than with ivermectin. But most notably is you probably will hear this in the lay press, that this new study, the interpretation that they gave it was ivermectin for COVID-19 is unlikely to provide clinically meaningful improvement in recovery, hospital admissions, or longer-term outcomes. So it also said that SARS-CoV-2infection, ivermectin is probably not useful in the vaccinated population. How they got there, I don't know either. But let's kind of go through this, Stuart. So one of the things I think is most notable is the funny thing is when you actually pull out the tables and look at the data, the outcome is very different than what they state in the abstract. So it actually showed significantly improved recovery and significantly lower risk of long COVID with ivermectin, despite being the most clearly designed fail study, meaning let's kind of think through this here. So the guy, the investigator, Professor Chris Butler, also did the molnupiravir study called the panoramic study, and comparing that. So first of all, usually when we have a study, we talk about how quickly you need to get the medicine. Would make sense, Stuart, that probably the quicker you get an antiviral or something that has antiviral, anti-inflammatory effects in the context of a virus, the more likely it is to work, don't you think?
Yeah, that's generally the way we always approach it. We don't wait for 2 weeks before saying, okay, now we can try something.
All right. So the delay in his molnupiravir study was less than 5 days with a median of 2 days. Okay. In the ivermectin study, it was less or equal to 14 days from onset, and they did not actually tell us the median. So that is interesting in general. The other thing is when we talk about how long the treatment lasts, me and you, people who know how to use ivermectin, for the most part, ivermectin is very useful for more like 7 to 10 days. But at minimum, I'd say 5 days, especially around the time that this intervention was done, you would think that 5 days would seem reasonable. But instead, obviously, in the molnupiravir study, Chris Butler decided to make the treatment 5 days and giving dosing twice a day. In the ivermectin study, you can guess it, Stuart. What do you think? He did more or less days?
Did he do more than 1 day?
Yeah, he did three, but it's one dose per day. And it was the dose that was well below what we would call the real world use. By the time this paper came out, it's pretty obvious that 0.4 migs per kig of ivermectin was probably the what was needed. So the interesting thing also was they were directed to take the ivermectin without food. Does that sound?
That's what you take. That's how you take it for gut worms.
Yeah, exactly. So in many ways, it's this thing was designed to do the opposite. I'd say the most important thing was publication delay. So the molnupiravir study, it took them only 4 months to get that information out. Given that We now just got it out this week or this last week. Do you know how many months it was delayed to publish? Must have been very complex. Again, the other thing is the molnupiravir study had 25,000 people in it. This study had 4,000 people in it. So it would seem that the one with 4,000 people, you'd be able to get the data in and actually publish fairly quickly, right?
Yeah, Stuart? Absolutely. I think when did this one end? At the end of last year?
Yep. And so it took 19 months of delay.
A year and a half.
To get this in. And then, lastly, obviously, when we think about efficacy or medicines, we also think about cost, okay? And so access. And so molnupiravir, it's $700 cash. It's pretty, sounds like a lot of money. If ivermectin was available like it should be, we're talking about cost probably in the single-digit dollar range. But obviously, one of the reasons that ivermectin is more expensive is because of the lack of access to it. And so really, one of the things is one of the manufacturers here is really, supply and demand. The supply is not enough to meet the demand. So obviously, the price goes up. But if our medical industrial complex was, honest and basically saying, let's get this medicine out there, it probably would be much less than what it is now. But even the medicine, my typical patient pays less than $100 for ivermectin, wouldn't you say, Stuart?
Yeah, no question. I think that's now the price, even though it shouldn't be more than five. But, what's interesting in the introduction of the paper, they talk about all these things that ivermectin's been shown to do.
Yeah.
I thought it was very interesting.
Well, that's why they had to make it such a crappy study.
Right.
Because otherwise, they were going to, a lot of times when you start out a study and you state everything it can do, you've got to design it in a way to make it, it's hard to design it in a way to make it fail. But even good statisticians and good medical industrial complex brown coats brown shirts are able to design a study where all of a sudden a medicine is ineffective. And as you can tell by the way this study was designed, that was their goal.
Yeah, it's amazing. I guess they had to. This is Oxford, remember. They had to. They know how studies should be appear. But we've known for going on 3 years now the over 30 mechanisms of action that ivermectin has against the virus, against the inflammation it causes, and against the clotting. And it's very sad what we are, what we're discussing here in regards to this. And we're going to talk more about what the New England Journal of Medicine's prior editors said about the integrity in medicine. Anyways, so Oxford does a hit job on ivermectin. Pierre Corey, I'm sure, was not surprised.
Yes. I think this, again, I mean, the reality of this is what it does show, even in the context of being set up to fail, is that that basically with a p-value of 0.0000001, this thing basically had significantly better health 1 year later in people that took ivermectin. So in the context of at least long COVID or persistent symptoms of COVID, which is what we take care of a lot of, just that is, a reason to be pretty happy about. So the other thing is, interestingly enough, there were 2 deaths in the ivermectin arm and 11 in the non-concurrent control group. So, just throwing that out there, 2 to 11, that's a pretty good, that's a pretty big, difference. Obviously, they made the control groups non-concurrent, so they weren't comparable. So obviously, they couldn't have a end result, but that they would like. But these overall p-values for sustained recovery, early sustained recovery, alleviation of all symptoms, and sustained alleviation are all less than 0.0001, which means that it is very likely that this did not occur by chance, which they were hoping to actually have the opposite. So,
yeah.
And most importantly, I think the other thing is there's pretty extreme conflict of interest here. It's nice to be able to compare the molnupiravir study to this study, but it is interesting that the chief investigator for this is also the chief investigator for the molnupiravir study, which has a $8 billion impact to Merck as a profitable drug versus Merck, obviously also the not really the patent holder in a sense, but I guess they are the patent holder, but they're patent holder with no rights in a sense. They gave it away. They're comparing head to head a drug that makes somebody a bunch of money versus somebody that makes them none.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the C19study.com and I'm looking at the cost per life saved. Ivermectin is $25. Molnupiravir is $138,000. Remdesivir is $1.5 million.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
so, thank God for C19 study.
Yeah, and I think this goes to show you how top-line media, media-perfected abstract conclusions are really, if you hear something, almost I would say recommend to any of our listeners, if you see something on the news or hear something on the nightly news that says, so-and-so doctors say this and this, I feel like at this point, the reality is it's probably the opposite, and there's also some ulterior motive by whoever is putting out the information.
Yeah, that's a very important point. I thought that Brett Weinstein last Monday on the roundtable that Senator Johnson had, that he said basically we've learned if CDC says something, you can believe the opposite.
A sad state to be in.
Yep. It's an accurate. It's wonderful in that it is accurate, but it is sad. You're right. What have we done to ourselves? But, oh well, we'll just allow the deep state and the medical industrial complex, like the Hospital Association here in Alabama, to run roughshod over what the people of our state normally would want. We will, of course, get into that the next segment. But this is just a fraudulent study in so many ways.
Yeah, and it even in its fraudulence and probably how much machinations they had to go through to get this thing published with the abstract that they agreed to, you are talking about basically a still a positive outcome.
Yeah.
No negative issues at all.
Right. They even say that in there.
Yeah. And so, but just the way this was done. I mean, the other thing is in the days of warp speed, in the days of your governing bodies interested in finding you a result that would be helpful. It is interesting that it took 26 months from the date of completion of the trial to get this information out there. Now, the information, obviously, headline would have been doesn't do a darn thing, but I can imagine most people would have dissected the trial just like we did and said, actually, it shows you that it does something. Even if you basically set it up to fail, it still succeeds.
Yeah, what's interesting about their conclusion was that there was a modest reduction in first reported time to recovery. So what is that? So that's basically you get better quicker in a mild case. Sounds like, the reason that the vaccines were approved. Yeah.
Yeah. And it here shows you a very interesting thing. So they had an anticipated completion of the ivermectin arm in December 2021. They ended the ivermectin arm December 3rd. It was removed from the website December 2nd and December 3rd from the trial. They didn't have a press release or rapid tier top tier publication indicating positive results. That's basically meaning. And ivermectin was added back to website with claim of pause due to supply issues. Trial does not respond to MedPage Today regarding supply problems. A statement from Merck is dramatically different to their previous position and is consistent with them knowing that a trial they cannot ignore has positive results and them being unsure if they can suppress the results. The trial supplier, Edenbridge, denies any supply issues. Professor Chris Butler declines to comment.
Fraud.
Everything about this screams fraud. And so I think that's, I mean, the sad thing is they probably waited to publish this to get as far away from COVID as possible because they didn't want probably them to be in jail in a sense. I don't know. I mean, because of the fraudulent nature of the trial. So it's, you know, and they also, you know, initially the inclusion criteria was less than 7 days. Then they changed it to less than 14 days after 3 months. And then they started out with age 50 plus with comorbidity or 65 plus. And then in February of 2021, they changed to 18 plus. So what they basically wanted to do was to get more people that weren't going to really be harmed by COVID into the both arms, which would make the statistics it's easier. So if you get a bunch of healthy people on both sides, you're not going to see as much of an effect. That's just kind of how I do it. Imagine running a diabetes trial with a bunch of people that aren't diabetic. You probably wouldn't see the A1C improve.
Yeah. But once again, lack of integrity, how many studies did they actually do on pregnant women before approving it? Yeah. Their studies show.
Exactly.
Yeah, these people have no integrity.
Smaller studies with lots of chutzpah behind them in terms of their, you know, already determined outcome are very different than trials trying, you know, it actually probably takes a lot more machinations of the criteria to prove something doesn't work if it's already known to work.
Right. Yeah.
So, right. So all that, again, you can go look at this yourself. Well, one of the best sources is C19 ivermectin IVM.org. It's part of the COVID-19 early treatment. C19.
Yeah, C19study.com. It's the best repository in the world. It's updated daily, and it looks at over 40 agents that have been used to try and treat COVID.
Yep, C19early.org. So all of that, go look at it for yourself and you'll see that a lot of the things that you've heard are probably the exact opposite of what is really out there in terms of the actual data. So with that, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Hankersley. We will be back.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Today's high-stress, on-the-go lifestyle makes it hard to stay heart healthy. Lifestyle changes like exercise and diet are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support three aspects of heart health: cholesterol, blood pressure, and triglycerides, with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 13 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Clean, pure, with premium ingredients, Global Healing's Pure Plant Protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop. And it's a perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with Pure Plant Protein. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing. Giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Welcome back. Again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley. So the next thing that we want to discuss today on America Out Loud Pulse is the ongoing issue with kind of the medical industrial complex and its cozy relationship with government and government dictates. From the WHO to even our local state here in Alabama, one of the things that has made medicine hard to change and also quite corrupt is its cozy relationship with government. And that is nothing new. And so it continues and continues to be an issue in our state. And so with that, I'm going to let Stuart Tankersley talk about his most recent article in 1819 News, where he calls out the legislature and the medical industrial complex in Alabama. So, Stuart, tell us a little bit about kind of the basics of, and again, I think this applies to any state. Most states, if you actually get down to it, a lot of the state power is through the administration of health, and whether it's Medicaid, whether it's hospital or certificate of need. So as much as we're going to focus on Alabama, it is likely that your state suffers from the same problems.
Farewell address in 1961, and he's most well remembered for that, for talking about the warnings or warning about the military industrial complex. But in the in this speech, he talks about the medical industrial complex or the scientific technological elite. And I think I'm gonna just quote these two sentences here. We face a hostile ideology, global in scope, atheistic in character, ruthless in purpose, and insidious in method. And then later on in the speech, he says, yet in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific technological elite. Boy, if that doesn't summarize it as well as anything I've read, I don't know what does. and I talk about Senator Johnson mentions this in last week's hearing or roundtable discussion. And I say, with the WHO seeking to gain complete authoritarian control of the planet's population in the end of May, there should be an outcry of opposition by all freedom-loving peoples. Unfortunately, our nation's president and the medical industrial complex are not so subtly supporting the move. The same loss of freedom. What's interesting is I've listened to several talks about this, that issue with at the WHO, and it looks like that the Eastern Bloc countries, former Soviet Bloc countries in Eastern Europe, are the most up in arms about it. In other words, they, unlike us, have seen this play out, and it doesn't end well. Then I talk about this same loss of freedoms happening right now in the Alabama legislature as the medical industrial complex, I call it the MIC, M-I-C, headed by the Hospital Association and its all too subservient medical association, doctors, force us further down this injurious and deadly path. Of the dozen or so big mules that run our state, none has wielded their power more brazenly and destructively the past 4 years than the Hospital Association. As more physicians are employed or semi-employed by hospital systems, we lose the important voice of the patient who encounters their provider outside the domain of the hospital. In evidence, the state government should help reverse, not increase, a hospital-based system's chokehold on healthcare that Ike warned us about. It probably sounds unique for Alabama to have such a. I know that is the case here in Alabama, that there are a dozen or so big mules, but I would bet that it's very similar in other states. What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, and I think it has to go with, I mean, as much as the federal government has taken over a lot of domains of even state governance. One of the last things that wields a lot of money and a lot of power is the administration of medical care in a state. And I think that's hospital associations, the hospital system, Medicaid, Medicare, all those things are administered at a more local level. And that is where there's a lot of power to be wielded. So, but it's not that different, I don't think. I think most states probably most people that are the, consumers of care have no idea who is in charge of making the decisions on how, when, where, and how effective the care that they get is.
Yeah.
But it's likely all a bureaucratic process, just like our state is. So.
Yeah. I think it'd be remiss for us not to talk about also how Alabama made national news the last couple of weeks. And I wrote about it in the article on 1819news.com. But the IVF centers, I think it's a lot's been misconstrued or flat out lied about in regards to that case. What happened was a IVF, the infertility clinic down at the infirmary hospital. By the way, do you know who the medical director of that clinic is,
George? He's also president of MASA.
Yeah, the medical the doctors association in our state. Very convenient. Anyways, Dr. George Koulianos, and that's straight from his website that he's the medical director. Anyways, their clinic did not protect the embryos that they had under their charge. And these IVF centers basically have very little oversight. There's very little regulations to them. And so they create all these excess embryos and they put them in a freezer, and then the couple has to pay for an indeterminate amount of time.
Storage
fees. Freeze them. Right?
Yeah, storage fee.
Yeah, storage fee, right. And so, unfortunately, a homeless guy supposedly got into the clinic after hours and destroyed some of the embryos. And so, rightly, they were sued. The fertility clinic was sued. And it made it all the way up to the Supreme Court in our state. And there was a 7-2 ruling that in our state, the sanctity of life is based on an embryo. That is when it is indwelt with a soul. And so the national media had gotten a heads up about this ruling that came out 2 weeks ago. And once it came out, they turned the levers of their PR machine on, and state senators were getting hundreds and hundreds of emails within 3 days of the ruling saying, you've got to do something about it. You got to do something about it. And sure enough, they have a senator who is at their beck and call, Tim Melson from North Alabama. And so he took a bill that was written by the UAB system and also by Cooper Medical, which supplies some of the supply. They're a supplier for some of the things that are involved in the process, and basically gave them immunity. Gave them immunity, not going forward, but retroactively as well. Thankfully, there was another much shorter bill that was presented by Senator Gavan and Stutz, and they made it so that they're addressing the specific problem. After the, backing up a second, after the ruling came out, UAB said, we're going to stop doing this. Well, they, you know, I think it's an, as one doctor told me, that's a form of abandonment potentially. But, the reality,
and again, the reason they're going to stop doing this is because they can't keep them safe.
Right. By the way, that's clearly the reasoning that they had this bill presented. But
by the way, I mean, it's crazy for hospitals to act like this, because guess what they do every time you go in to get medical care? I mean, right. You know, it's you're being, you know, the human is imagine if, you know, if a patient died in a hospital and they were at loss for it, they say, well, we can't actually run the hospital at all anymore because we're responsible for making sure patients live.
Well, it's like going into a prison now when you go into the emergency room almost, but or even worse, an airplane. But anyways, I wonder when they're going to the strip search. But they can't, I mean, the idea that they, because of their negligence, that we need to rewrite the rules so that they have complete immunity is absurd. Of course, Chief Justice Tom Parker wrote in the opinion that we need to come up with a way to regulate these things in order for there to be closer oversight. Because why are they making all, with the technologies today, why are we having all these extras? One of the senators told me that in Italy, they have a one embryo policy. If you want to go through the IVF thing, they only allow the facility to make one embryo.
Any of these providers or the fertility doctors will tell you that they have ways to do it that way.
Yeah, right.
Because again, I mean, probably reason in Italy is pretty obvious. Italy is a very Catholic country. And it goes to show you that they are very against any kind of, you know, loss of life. They think life begins at conception, which is right. A biblical, you know, stance.
Yeah. And I've listened to many, many discussions about it, and you can't separate the embryo from the soul. They want to, but they logically cannot do it. And it's very unfortunate that these people used our state over something that's very fixable. And that's what Chief Justice Parker was saying. This is, you know, y'all need to come up with some regulations to determine how this is going to be done. And instead, we get this barrage, this hit job by the national pro-abortion. And I was talking to a family member last night about it. This was a hit job by the pro-abortion side because they want to make us look ridiculous in Alabama by saying that an embryo has a soul, yet they can't defend their position. And they think that this is a big winning, pro-abortion is a big winning thing for them politically in the country, and so they're going to use it as a PR situation to make
it is a weak, I will say, being pro-life. One of the weaknesses in the argument that the stances we have is IVF becomes an interesting endeavor. And I'm not biblical enough or a pastor enough to say what each individual decision is, especially among a couple that's infertile. But, you know, if you believe in life at conception, that means that IVF has some interesting stumbling blocks that you have to overcome. But those things are, I mean, I think they're overcomable. It means that the practice of how it's done needs to change, which is what I think Tom Parker was saying.
Yeah. And none of this is new to the industry. It is new to us, to me, but or to most of us, I think. But Al Mohler, who is the theologian and ethicist, I think is a good way of describing him. He has a well-listened-to podcast called The Briefing Every Day. And two or three weeks ago, he had two different times when he discussed this whole thing. And he said he wrote about this over 20 years ago. This industry is well informed about the potential with this, with these extra embryos. And so, no, they just want to deny any responsibility like they've done the last 4 years during COVID. They just want to avoid any responsibility for their poor decisions, potentially.
Yeah. Which, and, again, goes to show you that it's just an inch. I mean, I think one of the problems I have a lot of with medicine now is, I'll compare two people. One of them I know, which would be Dr. Redfield, versus somebody I don't know, but I do know what he's even talked about. We talked about on the show before. There are people that have their, there's ethical men that are God fearing, like Dr. Redfield. And then there are men in our profession, like Anthony Fauci, who openly states that he doesn't have any need for, governance by God's institutions.
No.
And
it
works
well for him.
Yeah. And so to me, that's where, when we're dealing with life and death, whether it's somebody with COVID that we're not allowing the family to visit as they die, versus whether we are protecting embryos that have been created, that's where life, or what I would call the value of life, or being made in God's image, matters. And if you have no concept or moral lens to see that, you're going to think very nihilistically, and also not understand why things like this matter so much. Instead, you'll ridicule it.
Yeah. Yep. That's the trap we're in, because they're in, not us, but they put us, they're trying to put us in their trap. And we just need to reject them. That's what, in my article, I said that the Senate pro tem, the guy in charge of the Senate, well, the lieutenant governor and the Senate pro tem, should have immediately validated the sanctity of life that Justice Parker said, Chief Justice Parker said, and then said, we're going to look to get some regulations. We're not going to come up with an urgent, because the UAB hospital system demands that we come up with a law that protects them. We're just going to make thoughtful decisions, and we're going to deal with this after this session. That's a no-brainer. But instead, they showed that they are captured in large extent by the medical industrial complex.
Yep.
It's a very sad place for all of us to be trapped in.
All right. And with that, again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankulis-Lee on America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.
When God, through his grace and mercy, gave us free will, the will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutLoud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep deep. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients supporting all four stages of sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
I did not think that I was naive 7 years ago, and then I learned that I had been very naive, and I keep learning that lesson. Each new discovery reveals that I was missing something that was right in front of me, and I think that's actually the hallmark of the exact pattern I'm describing. We are in something that I have called a Cartesian crisis, where the failure of all of these truth-seeking mechanisms have left all of us in the dark. There's very little that we can establish with any certainty. And the problem is that the human animal will be driven crazy by such a state. You can only drive so long after you've put on a blindfold before you hit a curb. And so that is not a healthy condition, and it is certainly not a long-term plan for our survival. So I do mean that we have to win this battle, because the existence of the West certainly, and possibly the existence of our species, depends on it.
That was Dr. Brett Weinstein. If you didn't see his interview with Tucker Carlson 2 months ago, he gave two, but the first one was talking about the COVID lies. It's very powerful. I would encourage you to watch that. But here he is testifying before a hearing, a roundtable that Senator Ron Johnson had. He has had multiple of these, it's a big event. Every once or twice a year, he'll have these. And he had a very interesting wide range of presenters this year. And there was this was a four-hour roundtable discussion. And Brett Weinstein does a wonderful job there of saying, basically, we are in a terrible, awful, end game trap. And he's not wrong, because we do not know what truth is. We do not crave it. We do not, we allow the lies of the spirit of the age, if you will, to run amok. And it is to the detriment of us all. But Dr. Weinstein is very firm in his testimony. He's at the around the 3 hour and 30 minute mark. But anyways, he was immediately preceded by an interesting presentation by Dr. Matthias Desmond. Dr. Desmond is a mass, so he considers himself a mass psychologist. Here's a guy who is from Europe, and he's been on top of this for the last 3 years. But he gave a wonderful presentation I'm going to play a clip of. And it's his background is basically looking at how totalitarian systems establish themselves and the insanity on which it is made, they are made. And I'm going to play a clip for you now.
Two things for a totalitarian system. On the one hand, you need an elite which excessively and relentlessly uses propaganda to keep control over the population, and then you need a part of the population, 20 to 30% usually, to go along in that propaganda and to buy fanatically into the narrative. And we've seen, I think, both components of a totalitarian system in this crisis. And I think, like, if you want to know what we can do against such a totalitarian system, then it's crucial, I believe, to really understand and to feel what the psychological mechanisms are at work, both at the level of the elite and at the level of the population. In a nutshell, I believe that what is crucial to understand how such a phenomenon can happen is that a society of the population should be isolated, should struggle with lack of meaning making, should be anxious, frustrated, and aggressive. And if under these circumstances propaganda is used, then there's a good chance that propaganda which disseminates a narrative in the population which offers an object of anxiety and a strategy to deal with that object of anxiety, a virus and lockdowns, for instance, then there is a good chance that the anxiety in the population will attach to the object of anxiety in the narrative, and that a major part of the population will be willing to participate in a strategy to deal with that object of anxiety, even if the strategy is utterly absurd. And it's like perfectly comparable, it's identical actually, to hypnotic state and to prevent the hypnosis. To go deeper and deeper and deeper, you need some people, not too much, some people who continue to speak out in an as sincere and truthful way as possible, and who continue to do so, even if that means that they will lose a lot in the world of appearances. And I hope and I'm confident that there will be enough of us who will continue to do so.
Mr. Dr. Desmond, in your written testimony, you talked about the Enlightenment and how science was going to prevail and lift humanity out of despair. Eisenhower, in his farewell address, talked about the dangers of public funding of science and how it produced an elite group of scientists and technologists that are going to drive public policy. It seems like that's kind of where we're at. And it's that elite group that has been driving public policy and quite honestly, have been driving the propaganda. Can you speak to that at all?
Yes, of course. I believe that what we've witnessed throughout the last 50 years, I think, is a radical perversion of academic discourse. In the beginning, science was a pure example of truth speech. It was the discourse of a minority who went against a majority and who risked everything to articulate that discourse in society. But slowly, as science became the dominant discourse, it got perverted, as usually happens when the discourse, the truthful discourse of a minority, becomes dominant. And just before the corona crisis, the academic world was in a terrible state. We often forget that, but like 15 years before the corona crisis, we've seen the replication crisis in the sciences, showing that up to 85% of the academic papers, for instance, in the medical field, cannot be reproduced, and that many of them are fraudulent. And so that was the background, I think. against which, like an entire academic community, could collaborate with this narrative that seized control of society in the most destructive way imaginable, I think.
So what drives that fraud? I mean, is the grants, is the funding coming from, you know, a source that's going to want a particular outcome of the research?
Funding is one thing, but it is not everything. There's something else as well, a more profound psychological factor, which is indeed, funding is definitely not everything. And I know that because, like, in the academic field of psychology, funding doesn't play a major role. But still, most studies cannot be reproduced and many are fraudulent. I think we have to see it as money is important, but there is something more important. And it is this rationalism, I believe, that is typical for the Enlightenment tradition. The tradition of Enlightenment replaced the religious view on man and the world by the materialist view on man and the world. And it started to believe that a rational understanding should be the guiding principle of our society, rather than ethical principles. That was a fundamental mistake. Such rationalism, as this, for instance, conveyed by people like Yuval Noah Harari now, such rationalism, in the end, always lapses into radical irrationality. And that's what we are seeing now, I think. We are seeing how a world marked by the hubris that a rational understanding would be the guiding light of not only individual human existence, but also of human living together in general. It just proves that the state we find ourselves in now proves that rational understanding can never be grasp the essence of life, can never be the ultimate guiding principle of a society, and that in the end, it has a dramatic effect that people lose all ethical awareness. And that is exactly what we have seen in every totalitarian system that emerged, whether we are talking about Nazism, communism, or the contemporary transhumanist technocratic totalitarianism. It always starts from the idea that on the basis of rational knowledge, a new paradise will be created. And as Hannah Arendt said, the only problem with this totalitarian paradise is that it looks suspiciously like hell.
It looks suspiciously like hell. That is the world they have been creating for us and seek to create for us going forward. They've been planning for this for decades. They are truly depraved, wicked, evil people. And it's really interesting to hear people like Desmond and Weinstein talk about these moral certitudes that those in the Christian faith have known forever, that they're using these evil and hell and terms like this that are so obvious to the believer. And that's the destructive path that they have set us on. And it takes everyone that sees the truth to speak out against it, to have courage, take courage, do not buy into the lies. And the lies have been perpetual. There was a quote back from a book that the book was written, I think, in 2002. And it was from it was either a book or an article. Back in the 80s and 90s, there were two individuals who were the former chief editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine. And both of them were very, very concerned at the lack of integrity of scientific studies. There's no doubt, and Dr. Weinstein and Desmond in their presentations talked about the lack of integrity in the scientific realm these days. And there were many speakers that spoke about this. I thought another very interesting speaker was the guy from Hungary who pleaded with people to look at what happened when you had a high vaccination rate and compare those states and countries like his country, which had half of the vaccination rate. And Hungary's excess deaths is not elevated compared to those who were vaccinated with a high vaccine uptake. And finally, in closing out the segment, I'm going to play a short clip from Carl Sagan, of all people, when Charlie Rose interviewed him back in the 90s. And it's very telling that Carl Sagan was warning about what the trap we're stuck in today.
Danger of all this. I mean, you know, this is not the thing.
There's two kinds of dangers. One is what I just talked about, that we've arranged a society based on science and technology in which nobody understands anything about science and technology. And this combustible mixture of ignorance and power, sooner or later, is going to blow up in our faces. I mean, who is running the science and technology in a democracy if the people don't know anything about it? And the second reason that I'm worried about this is that science is more than a body of knowledge. It's a way of thinking, a way of skeptically interrogating the universe with a fine understanding of human fallibility. If we are not able to ask skeptical questions, to interrogate those who tell us that something is true, to be skeptical of those in authority, then we're up for grabs for the next charlatan, political or religious, who comes ambling along. It's a thing that Jefferson laid great stress on. It wasn't enough, he said, to enshrine some rights in a constitution or a bill of rights. The people had to be educated and they had to practice their skepticism and their education. Otherwise, we don't run the government. The government runs us.
Pretty good summation there of the insanity we're stuck in. The insanity of science is playing itself out in full speed and power this day and age, and hopefully at the state and national and international level, we will reject the lies and seek the truth. God bless. Thank you for joining us on America Out Loud Pulse. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley and Dr. Jordan Vaughn.